श्रियाद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay, so here's that. Now we brought up is that we're using this impersonal aspect or the say formless aspect to free one from attachment in the material world. But then the difficulty comes is that is only useful if it's in connection with the Lord, right? Because we're bringing out the element that the Lord is non-different. He has two aspects, form and formless, so they both go together. So if you take one without the other, then you have a problem. If you take only form, there's no formless, then the Lord becomes deified and you cannot, he does not have actually entrance into the world. He is not controlling the world and all that. That gives rise to then, you know, to have an opposing element running the place like that. So that's not appropriate. Then that means actually God's not all-powerful, right? Because when we say powerful, it means power, his energy. So that has to be able to enter. But if we only take the energy itself, then you have a problem, is that only the energy, then you just deal with the demigods or other elements like this, and then you don't deal with the Supreme Lord himself. So then that's a problem also. So you have to be able to deal with both at once. In other words, the demigods are in their position because of the power of the Lord. They're just holding the opposite office, wielding that power. Does that make sense? So then, whatever we're going to deal with in the material platform, then our attachment to it, that by dealing, bringing it into the understanding of the formless, right? Because right now we think it's the form that is attracting us. We like our car, so we think it's the form that's making everything nice. But actually, it's some quality of the car that attracts us. You know what I'm saying? So something has to be there. So it's actually the formless that's attracting us. So then we bring that out, because there is a difference between Krishna's quality that is there and the material matter that the form is made from. Does that make sense? Every quality has a form to obtain that quality or to enhance that quality. Right? Does that make sense? So, but this form is made out of dead matter, out of the material existence. So when you separate the two, you know, then you emphasize the formless aspect, then it's but that formless aspect is Krishna, because he is the formless. While that separating off from dead matter. Right? So that's the whole point, is the dead matter is what you're trying to, that's what you are attached to. In actuality, you're attached to the formless, but you think it's the dead matter. So therefore, you, increase your awareness and using intelligence, then you understand, actually, I'm attracted by the formless. It's not this form. So actually, I don't have any material need or material attachment. All my need and attachment, I have foolishly been thinking, is something valuable and of this world. But actually, it's my attraction to Krishna. Though I don't know it, that's why it's called Maya. Right? Does that make sense? If you're attracted to Krishna, but you don't know it's Krishna and you think it's dead matter, that's called Maya. You understand? If you're attracted to Krishna, you don't know it's Krishna, but it is Krishna, that's called Ajnata Sukriti. Right? Somebody's taking prasad, they don't know it's Krishna, but it is Krishna, so they get unknown devotional service. It doesn't count as bhakti, but it's Ajnata Sukriti. Devotional Sukriti, that building that up, then it can in the association of devotees become devotional service. But eating food and liking that taste or whatever it is, the aroma, the arrangements, what it looks like, whatever may be the aspect that you like about it, you know, that's actually Krishna, but you don't know it's Krishna. You think it's the dead matter. You think it's the rocket leaves or something. And so therefore, you think it's That's what's special. But no, it's Krishna. Does that make sense? So therefore, that's illusion, that's Maya. So now to be awake to what actually you're attracted and attached to, that's then this aspect of the form. I mean the formless. But if you, in doing, understand this higher, you understand the formless, that the demigods and their potent and their office holders, but you still don't see it in connection with God, that will still take you to the darkest regions. And then if you only see this just Brahman, and that's it, that's also bad. You know, especially if you're Mayavadi. In Brahmavadi, it's, you know, passable. Right? But in Mayavadi, then he thinks that all the forms means even Krishna's forms are Maya. So any form is Maya, so they can't distinguish. So they're worse than the demigod worshippers. Right? Does that make sense? They're taking demigods as supreme, and their bodies as supreme. You know, the potencies and bodies, and they'll take the Krishna to also be supreme and his, like that. They can't tell the difference. Therefore, because they can't tell the difference, they have a problem. The impersonalists then say none of it's real. Demigods formed or Krishna's formed, so then they have problems. Okay, so in this case, then this use of the formless is not recommended. So that's why we speak so heavily against the Mayavadis and the demigod worshippers. Understand? Because they're not actually approaching Krishna properly. Does that make sense? So they'll never get out of the material world. So you never have to worry that Mayavadis will get to the Brahman platform. They never will. There's not a possibility. Right? Because they don't deal outside of the material world. Because everybody is in touch with Brahman. So it's not that, but they're dealing with Brahman, so is everybody else. The dog's dealing with Brahman, right, you know? He sees something to eat, you know, he's dealing with Brahman. It attracts his attention. Why is it attracted? Because it's Brahman. Otherwise, what, the soul's going to be attracted by dead matter? You understand? It can't be. So therefore, it's that the aspect of Brahman that's in that particular item that's specific to their conditioning. In other words, they, by their own material desires and their illusion, become attracted or repulsed by certain aspects of the material energy that has certain qualities of Brahman in it. That makes sense? Right? So you're attracted by it or you're repulsed by it. But in any case, if it's dead matter, what do you care? Are you attracted or repulsed by this rock? Do you even care? Right? But if you attract or repulse, then even if it's put back here, it'll be remembered either in a positive or negative way. So there's a potency there. That's the formless. Does that make sense? So all these things that the others are saying, this is exactly what they'll be saying in so many varieties, like, you know, your Taoists and other things like this. What is it? Learn the form, seek the formless. Right, you know, they'll say all these nice kind of, they have all these kind of poetic ways of saying it, so it sounds good. But they're saying that what they're trying to say is this, but there's no way they could explain this. All they know is there's a form and then there's something else behind it. There's the formless. And they know the formless is higher than the form, but they actually don't know where it goes. So it's not actually that beneficial. They become very expert in certain things and move in, but they stay here. Does that make sense? So that kind of use of the formless is not recommended. Because unless you understand the form and the formless, Krishna's form and his formless are non-different, then only it's useful. Because in the material world, the form and the formless are different. But in the spiritual platform, they're non-different. You understand? So the formless is used to break the attachment to material form and therefore to encourage attachment to spiritual form. Does that make sense? How this is working? Right. So then, now, then this argument has then come up, okay, but then if you say he's only therefore obtained by devotion, means you can see these things, you can see the form and the formless, but if you don't see it in connection with Krishna, it's not devotion. You understand? That's why it said just because it's in connection with Krishna doesn't make it devotion. Right? When Kamsa sees Krishna, what does he see? Right? What does Krishna book say he sees? Death personified. So is that now his personal form? Or is that a quality? And that's all he's seeing. So that's the formless. But it's not favorable. It's not in connection with Krishna. Favorably. It's not devotion to Krishna. It's not service to Krishna. Though he's remembering Krishna as death personified 24/7. Does that make sense? Do we understand here how this is working? This is the scientific analyzation and breakdown of these things that are our normal day-to-day philosophy. But unless, it means if one just has that sincere faith and just sticks to that and applies it successfully, nice. But if one's having any difficulty, then one needs to analyze it to be able to break it down so you can tell where is the Maya and where is the Krishna consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Oh, I did something wrong this morning. Oh, it's so bad. You know, I got up late, you know, from Mangal Arti, or didn't make it to Mangal. I'm so bad. This is not nice. I got to stop this and this and that. Did you hear anything devotional in that? You understand? It was just about bad is not good. I have to be good, not bad. Where did Krishna come into this? So how much of our time is spent in our process of sadhana bhakti, or we're thinking as sadhana bhakti, that we're kind of dealing with being fixed in our service, in other words, anartha nivritti, to come from anishta bhakti to nishta bhakti, is it actually bhakti? You understand? This is the mistake. You know what I'm saying? Oh, he's a nice grihasta. He's doing everything. You know, the family's there. They got enough money. You know, they're around. They're good people. What'd that have to do with devotional service? That's pious. That's nice. It's good. What's got to do with devotional service? Oh, this guy's that. He doesn't deal with the family, or he's run off with this, or done this and that, or that one this, or, you know, he's got this bad quality we heard before when he was, you know, before he came to Mayapur. What has that got to do with devotional service? You understand? Why is it good or bad? It's good if it's connected to Krishna. It's bad if it's not. It's that simple. And if you try to stray from that point, you have strayed from devotional service. It's that simple. No, but it's not right. So, but it's a non-devotional not right. It may look very much like sadhana bhakti, but so what? A potato and a potato. Right? One goes on the plate, you know, here at you know, Radha Madhava's altar, and the other one is, you know, you can get down at McDonald's. What's the difference? Same potato, cut in the same way, fried, put salt on it. Okay, one's in a bell metal thing and the other's in a, you know, plastic, I mean in a wax paper little box, so, okay. But other than that, what's the difference? Simply its connection to Krishna, that's all. This is the actual bottom line of devotional service. Connected to Krishna, it's useful. It's not connected to Krishna. It may be really nice. It may be great. It may be fabulous, but it's still mundane. It's just great, fabulous, mundane, instead of disgusting, repulsive, mundane. But who then sets the standard of what's great and what's repulsive? Still, it's God. So you're still following his concept, but still leaving him out of it. You understand? This is why then the books on devotional service, not these books, not the ones dealing with the philosophy and like that, but ones that deal with devotional service, one of the first things they do is kick out religionists who are following, you know, the Varnashram and the Vedas, but not in connection with Krishna. Right? Or the moralists, who are moral, but not in connection with Krishna. And of course, then the Mayavadi is always endemic. They always get thrown out. You know? Does that make sense? Well, here, then they'll throw out the impersonalists that don't know what they're doing. Moralists and all, we don't get to. We're not necessarily discussing the technicalities. But this is where it lies. So you can see is from studying the Upanishads, even though it seems that it's so intellectual in that, it gets right into the heart of devotional service. That's why Bhaktivinoda, of course, says that if devotional service is not based on the Upanishads and Vedanta, it's not bona fide. Right? It's that simple. Right? Everything is actually very simple. The problem is it just, takes a lot to get to the point where you can understand that simplicity. You know, you have to have a lot of definitions before you. Does it make sense? So very, 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 very straightforward. It's connected to Krishna, it's great, it's not. That's why in one situation people do it, it's great. Someone in the kirtan does something really wild and all that at the festival, you know, everybody's there, it's that, and it was great. Then, you know, all the brahmacharis see that and go, wow, hey, that was cool. And then a couple of days later, a couple of weeks later, then they try it in their kirtan, but they're just copying the form. But the other one, it was the mood was good, and the form came spontaneously. Now they take that form and then, you know, ritualize it, and then they try to do that, and then, you know, wonder why nobody's getting all fired up and doing like that. But they think it's cool, and then one or two buddies think it's cool. So the kirtan goes on, even though everybody else is asleep. You understand? So that's why it looks like it seems it, but it's not. It's not the form. There is standard form, because you need a form. Because otherwise, how do you choose? So the standard form is there. But the more important is the mood of it. The mood is what makes the difference between material and spiritual, that's all. Because for us, spiritual doesn't mean formless without devotion. We call them transcendentalists, but technically we don't say that they are actually liberated, because it's temporary. Does it make sense? Yeah. So now, having brought that, then it's being said, but then if the devotion is the important thing, because we're here and we're rendering devotional service here, means the Lord must be here. He must be a resident here to accept it. Right? So again, we're still tainted with the mundane. Okay, we accepted devotional service and all that, but we're saying he's going to have to be here to accept it. Right? Because we still haven't distinguished between the form and the formless, and their non-difference. Right? Does that make sense? You have to be able to see the difference and see the similarity. That's intelligence. Right? So that's just doing one or doing the other. But in our philosophy, you have to do both at the same time. See the oneness, see the difference. Right? So just in case anyone thinks that, how am I talking all this formless stuff and this bona fide, our philosophy is a chinta beta beta tattva, simultaneously one and different. You understand? So that's the whole point we're trying to get here, is that how that works. Yeah? Okay, we're all comfortable with it. Yeah. Okay, so now he goes, now the author speaks the fifth sutra. He is the eternal supreme truth, beginningless and endless. For he exists beyond the limits of space and time. Right? Beginningless means there's no beginning. So how are we looking at something? We're looking at something from the present. Right? From the present, we're looking back. There's no beginning. And from the present, we're looking forward that there's no end. Okay? So this also, it's a side point, but we'll just mention it briefly. Is that, therefore, from this same viewpoint, we're looking at nityabhata nityasiddha. Eternally conditioned, eternally liberated. You're starting from the present, and you become liberated now in the present, then eternally you will be, if you're a devotee. Right? And until you do, who knows when the beginning of time was, because if you start from now and go back, You know, who knows how many lifetimes of Brahma we've been here. So how do you count it? Right? How many grains of sand are there? You could say you could be counted, but can you? Has anybody? Give us a number. If you can't give us a number, then you say it's unlimited or limitless. So therefore, no beginning. Understand? We are dealing with human beings here. We're not dealing with machines. So there is the element of the logic poetically presented, right? Does that make sense? Bhagavad Gita is pure logic. It's Upanishadic logic. But it's being done in verse form, in poetry. Right? Why does he have to say, yo, yo, yum, yum? You know? Like that. See, Krishna's always been cool, right? Okay, does that make sense? So then when we say this, use this word anadi, it's simply meaning you can't tell when it started. Because if you can get liberated, that means it can't be eternal. Because if there's an end to something, you can't say it's eternal. Right? People don't worry as much about the beginning. If the beginning started now and didn't start yesterday or eternally before, that's not a problem. It's the ending, right? For experience, what's more important, sambandha or prayojana? Yeah, so the results. So if starting now, eternally I'll be happy, I can relate to that. But who cares so much of it when it started? That's not the big deal. So therefore, the eternal that now is starting to go on forever, that's more important than when did the beginning start. So this whole thing on semantics to try to go against the philosophy is not important just because you have a logical brain and therefore you can't actually understand devotional service. Does that make sense? You may understand some aspects, but being contaminated by jnana, then you're not able to actually understand these points, right? Does that make sense? How could the jiva come from just the formless? Right? Because the jiva has a natural nature. Right? So that means that there's a natural form. Does that make sense? It just isn't logical. Though it bewilders many, many people. Okay, then continue. In Sri Upanishad mantras 4 and 8, it is stated, although fixed in his abode, the personality of God is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated. Okay, so now you see as we're dealing here both with the qualities here, unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, like that, without veins, pure, uncontaminated. So this is the Brahman aspect. The same time as we're dealing with the personal aspect, swifter, okay, then that's Brahman. But it says, and overcome all others running. Overcome. So there is the thing is, the action is there. So for action to happen, there must be form. Right, so the form and the qualities are non-different. So this is coming, is being explained here. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur then says, so that was the Upanishad. In the Shruti Shastra said, the Supreme is the eternal reality, full of knowledge and bliss. Right. Okay, so then reality then will be based on what you do. Right. Someone's there, and they're in a place, but then they do something that's not connected with the time and place. Then you'll say that's not real, right? They're crazy, they're not understanding. Does that make sense? So reality is based on what you do. I mean, it's also, of course, full of knowledge and bliss. You have proper knowledge, and if you're in ignorance, naturally you're not going to deal with reality properly. But putting that in place, you have knowledge, right? You have satisfaction from that, but still the point is then reality is action. Eternal reality means eternal action, eternal activity. Right? The pastimes are real. The interaction's real. Right? The Supreme is eternal, he never dies. Another quote, the Supreme Lord never dies. Another quote, the Supreme Lord is present everywhere in the material world, but he is also beyond it. Right? He is present everywhere, but he's beyond it. So beyond it is the Bhagavan, present everywhere. Then that is both the Brahman and Paramatma aspect. Right? Bhagavan is beyond. So when Bhagavan is here performing his pastimes, he's still beyond this. He's in the spiritual world, working with Yogamaya. We don't see it, we don't see, therefore Yogamaya appears to us as Mahamaya. Right? But it is a manifestation of Yogamaya. We see it as Mahamaya. The material world is a manifestation of Mahamaya, but it's the same person who's dealing with it. Therefore, you can see Yogamaya. Does that make sense? The spiritual world is controlled by Yogamaya, but you can see Mahamaya. The material world is controlled by Mahamaya, but you can see Yogamaya. Because they're the same person. Right? Does that make sense? Same energy. It's just differently applied. Right. Probably gives the example, the electricity. One heats, one cools. Same energy. Right? So that's why then the Vaishnavas aren't so worried about, they don't get caught up on this whole thing of time and space and this, because both are happening simultaneously. You know, I'm just saying the superior manifestation is the internal potency. The inferior is the external potency. But the perception of it and the result you get from it can be exactly the same, because the person who's managing both is the same person. Does that make sense? So that's why then it's not a worry about this whole thing of where the jiva is coming from, where he's falling from, you know, how could he fall from the spiritual world. The whole thing is because the jiva is in the position he can see both. The internal potency doesn't. The internal potency is what manifests as the external potency. So why they're going to see the external potency? You know what I'm saying? The guy at home is a husband and a father, and at work he's a judge. So when he's at home, he is the other, but he doesn't manifest that. He's not interested in that. Right? The friend can see both. Right? Does that make sense? So the jiva, he is able to see both because that's his nature. That's where he is positioned. When the internal potency manifests one way or the other way, when the Swarup Shakti manifests as the internal or as the external potency, then the jiva is what's in between. Because it's the same person, you go to the edge. Here your expansion's on the edge. But now, because of the reflection, you flip it there, that puts the jiva in the middle. Right? Because mundane is only in connection with the jiva. Right? God doesn't see mundane. His spiritual potency doesn't see mundane. The material energy is just inferior Brahman, so it's not seeing mundane, right? Parvati's engaged in the Lord's service. She's Vaishnavi. Her and her husband, they sit around and discuss so much about Krishna. So where's the mundane? The mundane is the perception of the jiva. That he sees the Lord's potency as separate from him and something he can enjoy. That's what makes the Maya. Does this make sense? Okay. So in Bhagavad Gita it is said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-pervading. In Srimad Bhagavatam it says, matter has no power to prevail over the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of the spiritual worlds. Right? So in other words, what we're trying to establish is how the Lord is here in the material world, but at the same time transcendental and not here. Right? So in other words, it's just a different perspective on the same. He walks, he does not walk. Or his potency and him are non-different. Right? He's all-pervading, but he's a person as well. That's what we're trying to establish. Because just to get into, oh, no, he's in here, oh, what is it, you know, like that. Then you have Hiranyakashipu. Is he in this pillar? And, you know, it's like that kind of a thing. So does that make sense? So the whole idea is that both can go on at once. The contradiction is not excluding the other. Does that make sense? In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.10, it is also said, in that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail, nor is there any of their influence in goodness. There is no prominence of the influence of time. So what to speak of the illusory external energy? It cannot enter that region. Without discrimination, both the demigods and the demons worship the Lord as devotees. Okay, so now there's no influence of anything like this. So the devotees and demons, then they also all worship the Supreme Lord. There. In the Katha Upanishad 1.3, yes. What is illusion? You know what I'm saying? If we're defining illusion, what exactly is it? By in the context of what we've been discussing. Yes. So does it matter if it's like this? If you see material energy as connected to Krishna in relation to Krishna, what happens?
You become detached from it and you love Krishna.
Yeah, you go towards Krishna. You go to the spiritual platform. What happens if you don't?
You become in ignorance,
you become entangled in illusory energy. So now, what would be the difference in principle if you're looking at the spiritual energy and not seeing it in connection to Krishna? Any difference? Yeah, that's all. So if you're in a very high grade, jewelry shop, and you're looking at things there and thinking how they should be yours and not the shop's, or you're in, the 5 and 10, and you're looking at some bubble gum and think it should be yours and not the shop's. What's the difference? Of course, they generally will make a movie out of the one, not out of the other, but so I'm saying. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that you're seeing Krishna in his energy and not making the connection. So what's the difference? So what does it matter where it happens? The jiva, that's his nature, he can see both. So that's why we use the expression absolute is given example by iron and fire. So when the jiva, iron, is in the fire of the internal potency, then all they see is Krishna in connection with the internal potency. Right? We don't have another term for that. We have a very straightforward thing. The iron can be in the fire or out of the fire, and it can be put back in. Unlimitedly, you can put a piece of iron in the fire and take it out. So there's no such thing as, once it's been taken out, it never can go back in. That's eternal damnation. That's how foolish it is. The jiva can always go back into fire. But the point is once it's actually situated in that fire, once it's actually come to that platform of prema, or you could say it's fully in that fire, it will never come out. And it's not that stupid. You know what I'm saying? So, but before that, then it's in the middle. It can see both. So because Krishna is the all-attractive, most are going to go that direction. But if one is attracted more by the form, right, the spiritual form is all manifested because of the love of the devotees. Right? Yam kama krodha sahajak pranayari bhiti. That Mother Jashoda and the others, they are, because of their particular attachment to Krishna, they manifest those forms. Right? So based upon their sthai bhav towards Krishna, they manifest the particular form that's natural for that relationship. Right? So, but that form is there to enhance the devotion to Krishna. Right? That service to Krishna. Does that make sense? So, they with their form worship Krishna in his form. Right? So your senses are engaged in the service of the Lord of the senses. Does that make sense? So now if you see the form, the spiritual form, you know, and you deal with it, and you like dealing with it, but you don't put your attention on Krishna, then what does that mean? You know what I'm saying? You don't know specifically Maya, but you don't know Krishna, and you can't stay in a neutral state. So therefore, you'll be put in contact with the external energy. You want to just see energy without connecting it to Krishna, then you're going to have to look at the external energy. You know what I'm saying? That makes sense? The boys walk into the house, you know, and there's a bunch of nice-looking girls there, and they start looking, and then the mom comes along and says, "Nothing for you to look at here, boys. Hit the road, you know. You're going to look around, go out on the street." Right? Why? Because they're protected. They're taken care of. They're not going to be allowed to be exploited. So you want to look around. Go out on the dead matter. Check that out. You understand? So then that's where you end up. We see how it works? So the whole point is that jealousness of Krishna, he's enjoying the form. Because otherwise, if we're appreciating the rasa, why would we get jealous? You can only get jealous of form, really. Right? You know what I'm saying? You're not feeling bad. The mother is with her child, and there's a nice interaction going. Another lady gets jealous, thinking, "Well, why don't I have a child? Where's my child?" You know, like that. She has no problem with the interaction, the rasa. It's the form that one's jealous of. Why they're enjoying that form, I'm that. Why they're enjoying that rasa in that form, and I'm not. You understand? So no one's complaining that Krishna's enjoying. The point is how come I'm not the one enjoying that form and that rasa? Does that make sense? So that's why then you're given the material energy to play with. If you're interested in form, here's the place of names. All it is forms with names. Let me see. But the names and the form and the form and what their name actually implies are different. The form is in support of. Like that. But it's not that it actually is that thing. You know what I'm saying? Its existence is not that. Does that make sense? Okay. Is there any other thing on this? Or? Okay. In the Katha Upanishad, 1.3.15, it is stated, "The Supreme is beyond material sound, touch, form, taste, or smell. He is eternal. He never dies. He has neither beginning nor end. He is beyond the material world. One who takes shelter of him escapes the mouth of death." Okay, so he's beyond everything. But you're saying he's beyond because it's something to obtain. Because the personal form is something we must achieve. That devotion to the personal form must be achieved. The other element is, if he's beyond, means we're starting from which perspective? We're starting from here, the present, where we are, from where we can see. That means, because he's already said he's all-pervading, he's here, but he's beyond. Right? So since, if we can appreciate him, here also comes the element of the use of this. If you can immediately appreciate him being beyond, then you don't really have to worry about what's here. You just absorb yourself in what's beyond, and that's so much more powerful than whatever's here. You just avoid offenses, and you'll be fine. You don't have to get so technical. But if you're seeing very much what's here and not beyond, then therefore this formless usage is applied. Because what I see here, you know, this, I'm looking at this, so I have to see that in this. Then I can get to that. Right? And we're saying the Upanishadic, this, that, this material, that, meaning the spiritual. Right? So Krishna is here in this as the Brahman, as the formless. And that's what actually makes this look attractive. So if we actually want to get to that, we have to appreciate that in this. Otherwise, the best is, why would one do that? One would just appreciate that. Why would you be appreciating Krishna's potency, you know, in your house and your new curtains, you know, when you could be appreciating Krishna in Braja down at the bank of Jamuna playing his flute, right? You know, to make the, you know, the comparison between how nice your curtain is and how beautiful Krishna is, there's no comparison, but you're still doing it. So therefore, those moments that you're not appreciating Krishna down at the bank of the Jamuna, you're appreciating them as your curtains, then you have to apply the formless on it. You have to find that in this. You have to find Krishna in those curtains. So actually, the reason the curtains are good is because it's Krishna. Not in the, what do you call it, pantheistic element, but that his potency. It's the potency of that curtain that makes it nice. It's not the cotton or the rayon or the silk or whatever it's made out of. It's that it carries that potency of attractiveness or practicalness or whatever is the reason you put the curtain there. You know what I'm saying? And maybe you can just be prestige. You don't even know if it looks good or not. You just know if you have these curtains, everybody else is going to go, wow. Because you just hired somebody. You wouldn't know, have a clue what's good. In fact, the maid's going to, you know, take care of them. You wouldn't even know how to make them look good. But you know that when your friends come over, then you're going to get some benefit. You know what I'm saying? So that's Krishna. That prestige is Krishna. That beauty is Krishna. Or the practicalness, yeah, they're nicely done, they block out the light, you know, they don't get dirty, they don't touch the floor, you know, they're properly done, you know, you can put them up nicely. So you like how well they're made or how well they function. But still, that is still Krishna. Does that make sense? So then you're seeing that in this. Then it starts to break your attachment to your curtains. Because actually it's Krishna. And if I'm going to be attracted by beauty or practical, and no one's more practical than Krishna, right? He can do many things at once, right? And he always does them well and complete, right? There's never a problem. After he finishes something, there are no side effects. Right? Like that. Yes?
Understanding that it's Krishna's potency, is there some time before you don't want to enjoy it for yourself anymore?
That'll just come if you keep seeing that it's Krishna's potency. Is that then, therefore, then, now if it's Krishna's potency, since you have the curtains, and you are in a position to have curtains. It's part of your, you could say, your situation, your social situation. Therefore, now you take care of the curtains because you want to bring out that quality. You, in other words, Krishna has that quality. You want to serve that quality through the form of the curtain, right? Because then it goes into the qualities Krishna, the form is Lakshmi. So therefore, you're assisting Lakshmi in her serving Narayan. So therefore, you keep the curtains nicely because actually it's Krishna that you're bringing out. But the beginning you're doing because you want curtains. You know what I'm saying? So it starts off with yourself and then you start seeing like that. Then you can even deal with it. So one would think, oh, when I see that it's actually Krishna, it's not the curtains, then I'll throw the curtains out or I'll neglect. That is a very neophyte concept of what renunciation is. Because if it's not yours, you don't care for it. If it's yours, you care for it. No, if it's not yours, then it must belong to someone else. So who does it belong to? So because it belongs to them, therefore you take care of it. Right? And so you're doing it as service to Krishna, then it becomes favorable. Right? As long as it's your position. It's not your position, then it's you know, there's no need for that attachment. So that will be given up. You know what I'm saying? So things that aren't within your duties will be given up. Those that are, well, as long as they're favorable, will be maintained. And if when they're not favorable, then they'll be given up. But in any case, in all three stages, you're seeing Krishna in it. Right? Does that make sense? So someone could be keeping their house nice and that and be completely a Paramahamsa, seeing Krishna and everything and taking care. Otherwise, it's, oh, you know, so fancy. Oh, they think it's so, looks so nice. Who do they think they are? Where is anything, you know? And then they'll be thinking that I am thinking in a devotional way and they're thinking in a mundane way. But where's the devotion? Right? Does that make sense? So all it is that you have an idea of right and wrong in connection, and you've connected that, fortunately, devotional service sometimes. But you're applying this, but does it have anything to do with devotional service? Right? Are we complaining that Yudhishthira Maharaj is the emperor of the world and has so much unlimited wealth, so isn't he in Maya? Shouldn't he be giving all that up? You know, because Krishna had all that wealth, that's why Krishna then, you know, sent him to the forest, because it had nothing to do with devotional service. Right? Isn't that why he went to the forest? You understand? But that might be a present day way he'd be dealt with. You know what I'm saying? If you brought his position and his lifestyle up to the community board, would he be allowed to stay here? Good chance not. Good chance if you took everybody in the Shastra and brought him before the community board, very few would pass. No. In reality, it is. So that's why you have to be able to see what is the devotional element. That's what's special about it. So whether Sudama Vipra is sitting in his house with nothing, or he has more wealth than Indra, he's still glorified because of his devotion. That's the point. So sometimes these things, means wealth can be an obstacle, but it doesn't have to be. Right? Wealth, fame, position, you know, how he's following, any of that can be an obstacle, but if it's engaged in Krishna, it's not. Even something you would consider good, so if wealth is bad, renunciation is good, but renunciation not engaged in Krishna service is worse than wealth not engaged in Krishna service. Because at least the wealth could be engaged, but you've given up the wealth, so you can't engage anything in Krishna service. You don't believe in engaging anything in Krishna service. It means ultimately you're seeing Krishna as impersonal. You don't really believe in the personal, because personal means his wealth, his for this facility. All the opulences are there. If people are there, rasa is there, dharma is there, opulences are going to be there. Right? But with the opulence, you see, comes this knowledge and renunciation. So the Pandavas have all wealth, all beauty, all power, and all fame, but they also have all knowledge and all renunciation. They go together. Some will say, oh, the renunciation is good, unless you're talking about grihasthas, and then get them out of here. That's the cause of all the problems in our society, is because there have been some sannyasis around, right? You know, actually, if you look at it, the grihasthas manage the place, but, you know, it's not their fault. They can never do any wrong. The sannyasis have to be the ones, the renunciation, because they don't understand, right? No? Right. So then, but then if any other grihastha has some stuff, oh, he should be renounced. What is this? This is nonsense. You know, where's the consistency? Where is the human element? Where is the living entity? Where is rasa? Where is relationship? It doesn't exist. So what's the bottom line? Jealousy. Any opulence, someone has knowledge, oh, they're just jnanis, you have no eye, oh, you're ignorant, you know nothing. You look good, who do they think they are? You don't look good, you know, how you can't, you can't present this in Krishna consciousness, this won't work for preaching. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So all of them can be looked at in bad light. Why? Because that's how we got ourselves here, is jealousy of opulence. That's it, bottom line. Krishna's there with his opulence, and we're jealous of that. We want the opulence. So if we have it, it's cool. If someone else has it, there's always a problem. You know, unless somehow or another today, in this moment, they happen to be my friend and I'm favorable. But tomorrow I may have a different opinion. So the only one that's always cool is me. Right? And that's as long as I'm feeling a little upbeat. But if I get also bad, then I still become the center of all the universe by not being, you know, up to the standard and nobody knows and cares and like that. You understand? So all these different things, they all are misapplication. Does that make any sense? Misapplication. So the problem is not what you have It's what you do with it. You know what I'm saying? So someone has more or less according to their need or position. It doesn't matter. It's if it's connected to Krishna. And this is not just words. You can say it is, but it actually has to be. Right? So that's the whole point. As one is conscious, then one is trying to connect these things. You know? You want to have some fun, go stand in the middle of your house, you know, start with one direction. Maybe just to make it easy, start east. And then look at what's there, what's on that wall, why those things are there, what is the why do you have them? Why did you pick that furniture? Why did you pick that color? Why did you know? So that's what, you know, so that then is why you picked it is Krishna. What you picked is Maya. You understand? I picked this because I liked it, because I was attracted to it. That's the Krishna element. But what I actually got was Maya. I liked the yellow paint because it was nice and bright and fresh, like that. So that freshness, that brightness, you know, that is Krishna. But what I bought was a can of Maya. Like that. Even the can's Maya. Like that. Does that make sense? And then just, you know, keep turning until you like, then go to the next room. You know? Also try looking up and down. You know, that's also part of it. 10 directions. Check out 10 directions. Then you might see is that actually, then what's the motive? Then you can see what's your motive behind everything. What's prominent? Then you can see, is that properly engaged? What would be the most favorable way to do that? I have the house and I have those, so that element's there. But therefore, in my service, what would be the most appropriate way to engage all this in my mind? Not means what I have in the house. You know what I'm saying? Means, in other words, what's the quality I'm looking for? Right? So if I'm always looking for beauty, then I should be involved in something that's connected with beauty and with Krishna. You know? Read about Krishna, note that, deal with beautifying things for Krishna, making things for Krishna that are beautiful. Does that make sense? You know, if it's organization, everything's nice, it's orderly, it's all like this and that, does all this right, things right, that means then Krishna in the form of organization. You should be managing, you should be organizing, you should be doing those things for Krishna. Does this make sense? So just by even looking at your house, then you can understand what it is, why you do stuff. So this is self, part of self-realization, right? It's the formless aspect, but it's what's going to break your attachment to thinking, oh, it's all, this is me, right? You're walking down the street with your friend, when you get to your house, this is me. Okay, see you later, right? Right? It's considered upbeat, trendy to say that, rather than this is my house, you know, this is me, right? You know. So, therefore, you know, or your clothes, yeah, it's me, you know, so, you know, like that. So that, does that make sense? So the whole idea is that what is that me? What is the actual conditioning? Right? Does that make sense? Then it becomes practical. Then this formless becomes practical in the day-to-day life of everybody. It's not something that the jnanis sit around and do. They have a tough time because they don't connect it to Krishna. Right? This philosophical problem makes a difference. There's philosophical speculation and mental speculation. Mental speculation we throw out because that's nothing to do. Philosophical speculation means we've heard the philosophy. Now we've heard this. Now we go home and we try to use it. So it's the speculation process. Is it this? Is it that? You know, does it fit this way? Does it mean that? But we're trying to apply the philosophy from Shabda down to Pratyaksha, what I see. That's what you're supposed to do. So that's philosophical speculation. That's bona fide, as long as it's being done for Krishna, of course. But mental speculation, that's not, because that's just to enjoy the mind. That's why, you know, the academics, the non-devotional scholars, all these are all thrown out, because that's mental speculation. Right? Oh, that sounds good. Yeah, so let's get into that. No, it's not a matter of that sounds good. It's a matter of this is reality. I got to make it fit. Do The other one is I only try to make fit what I think is nice. You understand the difference? So the one, the intelligence is the leading role. And then you adjust it until the mind is comfortable. The other one is what mind is comfortable about, that then it sends the intelligence through the hoops trying to find newer and newer ways to get a taste out of that. Does that make sense? Okay, so now his next point will be, here someone may protest that the Supreme Lord is beyond the material world, as you say, because now he's established, okay, now you're saying we're here, but you say is beyond, then why does he create the material universes in the first place? Right? If he's beyond, why would he create this? Right? If that's the most important element, that's what, why would he even create this in the first place? So that's the next point that'll be made. That'll be in the next sutra.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai.
Tapes and this and that, but basically we don't initiate, so therefore we can, you know, the six-year relationship can be there, but they'll have to look towards someone else's picture.
In the future? In the future, can you maybe?
That I don't know. As it stands now, that's not what's happening. Okay, is everything peaceful up there now?
It's kind of leveling out.
Okay, well that's good.
So it should be very good.
Okay, that's nice.
This is nice. I've never been here before.
Oh, really?
That's very nice.
Well, you guys built that wall, and some down at Pumps, the part of the temple that's up there.
I was going to ask you, there's a toilet nearby because I must have missed it.
Can you show him the facilities? I mean, it's the little boys' room. Or the little rooms for the boys, maybe.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's the last 2 levels. Amazing water change. Yeah. Last 2 lectures.
Oh, okay.
This whole form was formless. The two lectures form was actually just formless from that.
Because this is what Upanishads teach. Right, so that's Vedanta. Generally, we generally take it as yawn or mental speculation. It's not as philosophical.
government that probably makes the distinction between sort of one supports the other one. Okay, very good. That's useful.
Yeah, that's very good. Also, in the class over there in the temple, you were saying, like, the Shiksha maybe is formalized. But is there some kind of
I mean, it's just as a matter of it's an understanding that that's going on. And it's understood, actually, the practice of that. The instructions are used. You know what I'm saying? Because diksha, you take it, you should use it, but if you don't, you still have that diksha connection. But the siksha, if you use it, then there's there. If it's not, you don't have it. It's not
yeah.
It's just practice. You can express and say that's nice and all that, but there's no ritual.
No,
no,
no. So it just naturally develops over time.
Of course.